coming to you live from the Morningstar Mission sponsored studios. This is Carl and Crew Mornings on 90.1 FM Moody Radio.
You ever been tricked into doing something that you thought was a good idea, but it wasn't?
I'm sure I have.
I've done plenty of things that I knew were not a good idea, but I wasn't so much tricked.
You know, let me tell you about the job I almost took when I was 16, 17 years old. So, you know, it was one of those when you get to a certain age and you're ready to start making money.
Yes.
Dai, you have a teenager who is working a teenage kind of job.
Yeah.
And excited to start getting his own little paycheck.
Oh, he's loving it. Yeah.
Right?
Yes, absolutely.
So I was in that stage of life. And so I saw some advertisement or got word of this opportunity to make some money.
Oh, Ellie. I'm not sure I like where this is going. Oh, no.
Oh, my teenage years. So I sign up for this presentation to go and take this job, and I go to this kind of random sort of storefront, and they usher me into this room with other kids my age looking to do the same thing.
I'm curious. Okay.
And so they start explaining this job that sounds so lucrative. You can make this amount of money, and they start laying out all the benefits and all of the things that, man, this, and I'm thinking this money, I'm counting this money in my mind.
Sure. Like,
I can buy maybe a new pair of shoes. I can do this.
Oh, yeah.
I can do
ching,
that.
Ching, and ching, ching.
I had the whole plan laid out. I go home and tell my parents. I said, I got a job, guys. They said, what? You are not going to do this job. What was it? Story coming up.
Waking you up with adrenaline and Jesus. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
I took a look at this company that I almost worked for. It's still in existence. I'm not going to give the name of it because their plan is somewhat controversial. It may work for some. It didn't work for me. I'm Allie, Carl and Crew Mornings, by the way.
Yeah,
there was a time, I believe I was a freshman in college, and I really wanted a job. So I went and I sat in on this presentation to basically, I didn't know it, but it was a marketing scheme. And so they kind of target college students who want to make some money. And so they want you to sell knives.
Ginsu knives?
I wish Carl was here for this one.
Yes, me too.
Oh, wow.
That's the first thing I thought of.
Full
and
circle.
They lay out how you're going to do this and how all your friends and family are going to be so excited. You're going to give them this presentation. And then your grandma's going to buy a set of knives. And then your cousin might need some knives too. And then before you know it, you've sold all these sets of knives.
So
and then you move
funny.
Up to the next level. And it sounded really good. And I'm not saying that this particular company or this type of sales, that there's not some value in it, but clearly there's some risk. And clearly there's some things that they make sound better up front to get you in that may not actually pan out.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
So when I went home and I told my parents, I think I'm going to take this job. I am going to sell cutlery. And so they look at me and they said, we are not letting our 17-year-old daughter go door to door selling knives. And when they said it out loud like that, I thought, oh, maybe that doesn't sound like such a great
idea. Yeah.
Things are starting to make sense.
Maybe I don't want to be a knife salesman. Maybe this
door to door.
Door to door. Maybe marketing isn't my thing, but it sounded really good.
Sure.
And a lot of times we can get duped. We can get kind of tricked or misled. It happens when you're young, but you know what? It can happen at any age. And coming up, I want to take you to this kind of unique, obscure story. And draw some principles out. You don't want to get duped, but if you do, what's your next step out? We'll talk about it.
Talking about Jesus and having fun while doing it. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
Yes, I almost got duped into a marketing scheme that would have involved a teenage me going door to door selling knives.
I can't imagine anything less
fitting for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you, I could see you skydiving before I could see you selling cutlery door to door.
Carl's missing this.
He's missing it. And it's hilarious thinking about it because of all the jobs I would be terrible at, of all the jobs that would be a poor fit, this is one of them. And I'm thankful that I had parents who warded off that possible career option. And it was going to be a short-term summer gig, but it would have been a miserable summer and perhaps a dangerous one for me.
That's what I was going to say.
Not a super die. Yeah. You ever been almost duped into... A lot of times it does. It is kind of the appearance of being able to make some money.
I got the check as I was going through it because I got deeper and deeper into it. But everybody knows what a timeshare is. But this was sort of a furniture timeshare company. But yeah, the ad was like, make all kinds of money. Da, 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 da. Yeah, I was a teenager as well. And you go in there and they're just so hyped.
Yep.
And it just felt. As you're sitting through this, then they started weaning people away. And some people, their hype was so big that some of the people they started weaning away were crying because they made you feel like you're gifted. Mm. You're going to be great at this. Yep. And now you need to call us in 1 hour. If you don't call us in an hour, you don't get this job.
Oh, man.
And then they're telling you the salary's thrown out there. And then they've got these customers coming through that they love this furniture. And you think, look back and go, it was all staged.
Oh, yeah.
It was all staged. And then when you broke down the salary and then you looked at it hourly, it's like, I can go to McDonald's and actually make more. But they had you thinking, wow. Yep. And it was like,
wow.
Whoa.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
You know, and a couple interesting things from that actually parallel the story in scripture, that there was other people to kind of add to the story.
Oh, yes.
Kind of
yes.
A strength in numbers sort of thing.
Exactly.
There was that urgency to, make a decision.
Right
hey,
now.
Mm-hmm. Quick side note. If you ever, whether this is a phone call that you get that seems a little sketchy or a person who approaches you with some plan, anytime there's pressure put on you to make a decision right away, that should be a major red flag.
100%.
Major red flag. Whenever
Absolutely.
There's that urgency to call now.
Yes.
This offer expires. Get in on this now. If you miss it, it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Get out.
Great piece of advice.
Jonathan, you had some experience with the through friends.
Yeah, through friends. I was working at McDonald's and I had two people who left. They were both managers at the time and they left for one of these types of jobs. That is formed in a little bit of a triangle, maybe it goes mm-hmm. upwards and they left with the promise of making a ton of money. And I remember getting the Facebook messages when I worked at McDonald's. Hey, do you want in on this action?
Yeah,
and I was like,
this could be you too.
I said, I absolutely do not want in on this. And then a couple months later, they came back to work at McDonald's again because they had been tricked and they realized they had been tricked and the promises weren't working out like they thought they were going to.
Yeah. Let me take you to this obscure kind of story in the book of Joshua. You know, if you're reading in a Bible, a lot of times there's headings, and those weren't originally there,
right.
But the authors have added in to kind of help organize and structure and help for readability. Well, this section is entitled "The Gibeonite Deception."
Ooh,
I almost feel like it should say "The Gibeonite Deception." Dun dun dun.
Yeah, for real, right?
So let me give you the backstory. So this is when Joshua has led the people into the promised land. And do you remember what the assignment was from the Lord? What were they supposed to do when they get into the land?
They were supposed to get rid of all other nations completely yes. and entirely.
Right. And it is this epic story that plays out over many, many chapters that they're to take the land and all that that means, that they were not supposed to make friends and agreements with the nations around it, that
right.
these the Lord did not want the people led astray by the gods of these opposing nations, so they were supposed to go in and conquer the land. And so as they start to do this, word starts spreading. And so the people of Gibeon, they start to hear what they're up to and that, wow, okay, these people are taking land, they're taking it quickly. And so they come up with this plan to trick Joshua and the leaders of Israel. And it is a cunning plan. It is pretty in depth. So even though they are their neighbor, they live right there, they devise this plan to trick them into thinking that they're from this far off distant land. Therefore, they should enter into a covenant and agreement and make peace with them. Mm-hmm. So this is how they execute it. They take worn out. They put worn out sacks on their donkeys. So they try to make it look like they have done this long journey such so that their sandals are worn out. Their clothes are worn out.
Wow.
Their sandals are so broken down. They've had to be patched up. So they create all of these props, basically.
Yeah, it's
imagine
costumes.
This. They're
making
out there
look good.
Taking their sandals, rubbing them into the ground to try to make them wear a little bit. They're taking their clothes and ripping them up a little bit, rubbing dust on things, tearing them up. Let's look like we've been traveling for so long. Look at our sandals. Look at this bread. It was warm out of the oven this morning.
Actors, oh my.
I mean, this is cold-blooded.
Yeah.
Look at the bread. It's now dry and crumbly. The voice feels appropriate.
I think it's pretty good. Yeah.
You're doing good.
So dry and crumbly. We're from so far away. Perhaps we can make a covenant with you. And so Joshua and the other leaders of Israel, they're a little skeptical. How do we know that you don't live like right here?
Yeah.
But look at the bread. Look at the shoes. Look at the worn out sacks. And so they ultimately, this is Joshua 9, verse 14 is the key verse. The men took some of their provisions, but did not ask counsel from the Lord. And Joshua made peace with them and made a covenant with them to let them live. And the leaders of the congregation swore to them. So they don't ask counsel of the Lord. Mm-hmm. They trust what their eyes can see and what their, you know, basic kind of intellect can discern and go, okay, this seems a little odd, but yeah, this story checks out.
Yeah,
sure.
We'll
seems
go
good
ahead
to me.
And make a covenant with
Why
you.
Why not?
They get duped. They're not from a far off land. They're from a neighboring area. And instead of conquering this nation, they enter into an agreement with them, which is exactly what the Lord had told them. What? Not to do. So what do you do then? What do you do when you get duped? You don't ask of the Lord. You're in a situation that is of your own creating. You trusted your own judgment and got into this, and it was a bad deal. It was a bad plan. What now? Well, coming up, the rest of the story and the step out for you if you've been duped too.
Want to put faces to their names? Just follow Carl and Crew Mornings on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget, that's Carl with a K.
So what do you do when you've been duped, when you've been tricked into something? And, you know, sometimes something sounds so good. And we talked about marketing schemes and timeshares and the things that we can buy into. But sometimes it's a relationship. Sometimes it's a job. Sometimes it's a path that, man, it sounded really good. And then it proves to be nothing like what you thought it would be. So what did Joshua do? Well, they discover that they have been deceived by this neighboring nation that now, instead of being able to conquer them, as was the instruction of the Lord, they've now entered into an agreement to make peace with them, which was just not what God had told them to do. So they did not ask God about this decision. They did not inquire of the Lord. They just did what they thought was best. So then Joshua finds out that it's all been this big ruse. And he's like, why did you trick us? Why did you deceive us? Like, what are we going to do now? And, you know, cool part of the story that will help you today if you are in a mess of your own making. What is your next step out? Take a note from Joshua's book. We'll talk about it.
Giving hope directly from the source. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
So Joshua gets tricked. Leaders get tricked. They make peace with a nation that they were supposed to conquer. What now? Well, they've made a covenant. And a covenant that was made before the Lord. Not like they could just break it. And so they make these people their servants. But then it gets somewhat problematic because the other nations hear about it. And then they want to make war with the Gibeonites. And so then the Gibeonites come to Joshua and like, hey, these people are about to attack us. We're going to need some help here.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Hello.
And so now they've made a covenant with these people. So now they're going to have to fight for them. Here's the cool thing. the Lord still delivers them. They got into this battle that with for on behalf of these people that they had no business entering into a covenant with, and still the Lord is there. Joshua 10:9, and the Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, these opposing nations that are about to attack the Gibeonites. Do not fear them, for I have given them into your hands. Not a man of them shall stand before you." You know, when I first read this, probably about a couple weeks ago, and the reason why I took note of this kind of unique passage, because I was thinking about how often in life we get into situations that are of our own making.
Absolutely.
And the temptation when you get yourself into a mess or you've done it and you know it's your fault. There are times when it's tempting to want to like shirk the blame and but they did it and but this person. But then there are so many times when it's like you can't even do that because you go, this was my fault.
On me.
I got tricked, mm-hmm. but I should have known better. I should have asked you, Lord, if this was the relationship you
right,
wanted me into.
Right.
Should have asked you if this was the job you wanted me to take. Should have asked you if I should have made this move or that move.
Yeah.
And here I am. What's the temptation when you've gotten yourself into a mess? Well, let me try to get myself out of this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me go ahead and try to, I got myself into this mess. Let me figure out what I can do. That is exactly the wrong response.
Yes.
When you get yourself into a mess, it's your own fault. Seek the Lord as soon as you can. Don't just, yes, are there consequences sometimes that have to be, that have to play out? Absolutely. But don't let that prevent you from still seeking God's deliverance, from still seeking his direction. Repenting, God, I should have asked you about this one, but now I'm in a mess. Can you tell me what to do? It's that simple, because the more you spin your wheels trying to get yourself out of something, have you ever noticed it gets worse?
Oh,
not,
yeah.
Not better.
Like spinning tires in a mud,
yes.
In a mud hole or something, yeah.
So God can meet you in the mess that you're in, acknowledge that you've gotten yourself into a mess, and then ask God for help. It is that simple. Ask him for help. It's that simple, and sometimes, so often, we miss it. So today, ask God to help you out. Yep, he's ready to do it.
Get more from your morning show. Check us out on social media. Just search Carl and Crew Mornings on Facebook and Instagram.
There's so many things that I like about this story in Joshua. Joshua, the leaders of Israel, they get tricked into entering into a covenant with a neighboring nation that has heard that they're coming through, that they're taking the land. So they trick them into thinking, hey, we're from a far off distant place, enter into a covenant. We want to make peace with you. We've heard about your God. And so instead of inquiring of the Lord, hey, is this a good idea? To which he would have said, no, or likely remember what I told you to do.
Hello.
They just go based on what they think, and they enter into this agreement. And then when the Gibeonites, the name of this nation, when they get threatened, then Joshua and in Israel, they have to fight on behalf of these now people that they've entered into agreement. But you know what God does? He shows up for them. And so I think there's so many times that we get into a situation and we kind of think, well, this is just my cross to bear, so to speak.
Yeah.
I got myself into this mess. Now I either need to just sit and live with the consequences, or we go, I'm going to start spinning my wheels and try to get myself out of it. You know, I think a lot of times this can apply to complex situations. And I'm going to throw one out there that might make people a little uncomfortable. But what about when you get into a marriage and you realize that I didn't really seek God? Maybe you didn't know the Lord. And now I'm in this marriage. And I think maybe if I would have sought God, I could have avoided a lot of the pain. But now I'm in this marriage.
Yeah.
What do I do?
Well, I think it's kind of, in this situation, it's kind of exactly like what the Israelites did with the Gibeonites. It's a covenant. You have made a promise under God.
Mm-hmm.
And it should be honored still. It is not an excuse to leave.
That's a big one.
It's a big one.
I've gotten into this, let's say it's a job. So it's complicated sometimes, because I think when you first think, oh, I got myself into this mess, now I'm going to get out. No. Seek God, because when you enter into a covenant, let's take the marriage example, or even a job. You've made an agreement. You've made a commitment. Obviously, jobs. People can ultimately change jobs.
Correct.
You have entered into a marriage. That's a covenant agreement that under God for life. God can redeem decisions that you look back and go, I don't know if this was the best decision.
Absolutely.
God can still redeem it.
He can.
And that's the thing that I think people miss.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Yeah, let's take, I don't have clear vision on this, so I can't say for sure what God would have told you if you asked him.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is you are where you are. And so don't despair of that. Just seek God now. God, you see where I'm at. Help me. Help me to make this marriage work. Right. God, because I know marriage honors you. Ultimately, it's your creation. You're the one who had this whole idea of marriage to begin with. So how can you make this marriage work? How can you help us to get along? Mm. Because God can redeem that covenant that you entered into.
Absolutely.
And that's the encouragement. Yeah. God can take that job situation that maybe you feel like, I should have asked God about this one. God can show you the next step. Maybe it's to stick it out there. Maybe it's that he can use you there, that he can redeem it. Mm-hmm. That's what's so encouraging, is that you're not stuck because you made a bad decision or because you didn't seek God or because you were hasty or moved too quickly.
Yeah, I think about David. King David obviously made a horrible sin with Bathsheba. Mm-hmm. And it resulted in the death of a man who was faithful to his wife, who was Bathsheba. It involved taking a woman, not by her own choosing. Yep. And there were horrible things that happened there. Mm-hmm. But when David repented and asked forgiveness for his sin, when he recognized it, it was through those two that Solomon was born, the wisest king of Israel. And so God can redeem the most horrible things.
Yeah.
When we go to him and ask for help.
When we go to him and ask for help.
That's the key. And whether it's a job or you've made a move or a home, it's all the same umbrella. Go back to God.
That is the takeaway. Go back to God. I can't tell you what the path out is, because you'd think, oh, well, I got into this bad whatever, so let me jump out. Let's get out. No, that's you doing exactly the same thing that got you into the mess.
Right.
That's you still trying to figure it out and do what you think is right.
It reminds me of the spinning wheels in mud. You're not going anywhere.
You're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. Take a moment. Pause. God, what do I do here? What do I do here? I really need your leading. I need discernment. I need wisdom. God is so longs for his children to come to him. And we see this throughout. I'm doing a read through of the Bible, as many of you, I'm sure, are starting in Genesis at the beginning of the year and working your way through. So I've been in the Old Testament for a while. And what you see repeated time and time again is this crying out to God. And then the nation of Israel turns away and they start doing crazy stuff and they turn away from God. And then they cry out to him again. Well, you know what? God wants you to cry out to him again. He longs to hear his children say, help, God, I need you. Would it be great if you could learn and grow along the way and then not have to cry out to him for the same rescue the 1,000th time? Yeah, we want to be growing up. We want to be maturing.
Yeah.
But you know what? Don't let the fact that it's been 999 times keep you from crying out that 1,000th time.
That's very true. Absolutely.
Very, very true. He's a deliverer. Our God is a redeemer. Our God is a rescuer. Man, believe it today.
Talking about Jesus and having fun while doing it. We're Carl and Crew Mornings.
Well, as it turns out, sight, sound, touch, smell, and taste, the five senses. Researchers say there's more like 21.
21?
In what way?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you got to let me know.
At least nine senses. Most researchers think there are more like 21. Let's think about this for a second, because it's actually not listed here. So I don't have all 21. But What other senses could there be?
Are they talking about? Oh, I'm sorry, Jonathan.
I have no
like
idea.
The different senses, like you can feel hot, cold, warm. Like they're taking that into consideration.
Well, think about like you can like ones that are a little bit more obscure, like perception, your ability to perceive something. Like that's not really covered under sight, sound, touch, smell, or taste.
There's a sense that counts. It deals with how your brain understands where your body is in space.
Okay.
Like, so like depth perception almost.
Yeah, so your sense of, okay.
Your sense of
sense.
Location.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's
heights,
one.
That kind of thing, maybe?
What else you got, Jonathan?
Spinning? Let's see. I'm pulling up all the senses.
he's on this.
Thermoception. Thermoception. Ability to sense heat and cold.
Okay.
There's tension sensors inside your body found in your muscles allow the brain the ability to monitor muscle tension.
Also known as the ability to walk into a room where somebody just had a fight and sense the tension.
Yes.
No, I mean, think about
abort,
that. Think about your... You ever walked into a room and you're like, I can feel the tension.
I can feel the
here.
Tension. Yeah.
That in of itself is a sense. That's not captured
yeah.
here.
Yeah. Hunger.
Fear. What about, hunger?
Ooh. Hunger is
okay.
a sense.
Fear.
Fear is a sense.
Okay. So clearly they're onto something, right?
Yeah. I would say
it's
okay.
Just fine.
All right.
Okay.
Right.
How fine. About this one? It takes 7 years to digest a piece of gum.
I've heard that one for sure.
Don't swallow your gum. It takes 7 years. Turns out gum actually isn't digestible at all. It just passes through your system. So you don't actually digest it.
Huh? It just goes?
We don't need to get any more detail than
never mind.
Let's see. A toilet flushes in an opposite direction depending on the hemisphere it's in. I've heard that one.
I have heard that one too.
It's not.
That sounds
not true.
Like a dumb myth.
Oh, okay. You use just 10% of your brain.
I have heard that one.
There are days.
That.
There are days.
Yeah, that's true.
That is true.
Neurologists describe this myth as false and state that we use virtually every part of the brain and that most of our brain is active almost all of the time.
Interesting.
Have you ever heard the expression blind as a bat?
Yeah.
Actually, none of the roughly 1,100 bat species are blind. They do have tiny eyes and they're nocturnal, so they're in the dark. I guess they're not seeing much there, but they actually can see.
They can see. Okay.
Dropping a penny from the Empire State Building would kill somebody.
I thought that up until today.
And don't do that.
When I was looking up own myths of myself, and then I realized that wasn't a thing. And wow.
Not
who would have guessed?
This one I've heard. Handling a baby bird will make its mother reject it.
I have also heard that.
Or any wild animal, yeah.
Most birds have a very poor sense of smell, so in most cases are unable to even notice human scent on a baby bird.
Oh,
well, there you go.
All right.
I'm going to hold all the baby birds now.
Okay, I'm going to give you a... Wait, what?
Well, now I can hold all the baby birds and I don't have to feel bad about it.
Okay, I still don't recommend you going around and messing with baby birds.
Oh, okay.
But at least you know, I guess you could.
I could if I needed to.
And don't drop a penny either.
Yep. Your blood is actually blue before it's oxygenated. Have you heard that one?
Yes.
I heard that, but yeah, it's not.
It's a myth.
Yeah. What?
Human blood is always red,
why
although the level
blue,
of redness
then?
Does differ depending on how
oxygenation.
See if we can get one of us to pronounce it.
Obviously, we can't.
A goldfish has a memory span of just 3 seconds.
Yep.
Yeah.
Not true. Goldfish aww. Actually have decent memories for a fish.
Whoa.
Well, for a fish.
Why do we make fun of them so much then?
Yeah.
I don't know. Bulls are enraged by the color red.
Yes.
Not true.
Well, yeah.
Bulls only actually see blues and yellow. They react to that red cape because of the movement and the fluttering around.
The aggravation of it.
Yeah.
Got some sent in by text message. When someone has the hiccups, you're supposed to come behind them and scare them.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. Kind of seems like it works.
You know, the hiccup one is a real conundrum because I don't know that for all of our advances in so many different areas, mm-hmm. I don't know that there's still exists one surefire way to cure hiccups.
There's no real way to
there's
cure
so
hiccups.
Many different ones because believe me, I've tried a lot of them because getting hiccups is annoying.
Drinking water upside down.
Drinking water upside down or
hold
holding
your breath
or like breathing into a bag. And I don't know. I think some of them probably work for some people some of the time, but
sure.
A surefire one, probably if someone guarantees it, it's probably an urban myth. And we got a couple of you with the gum. Mm. Yep.
I love
it. If you touch a frog, you'll get warts.
Yep.
Isn't that
absolutely
true?
It's not.
No.
No? Okay.
See, these are, you hear these so much.
I know.
And they're so kind of built into childhood.
Yeah, absolutely. It blows your mind when they're not real.
Yawning is contagious,
that's
says 8143.
True.
I feel like
it
that
is
one
true.
Is true.
100%
yeah,
true.
Yeah.
Why is that, though?
I don't know.
Oh, 6324. I heard this one too. Don't swallow a watermelon seed or it will grow in you. Yep.
That was true for anything apple seeds. I remember that as a kid. Exactly.
I heard that as a kid. So we're walking around trying not to swallow seeds for fear of fruit growing in our body.
Yep. I remember when I was a kid, it wasn't the fruit thing for me. It was pizza bubbles. My brothers used to tell me that those bubbles that are on your pizza, you know, the kind
the
of cheese bubbles.
Yeah.
There's little pizza men sitting inside those bubbles that when you eat the pizza bubbles, that then they're swimming around inside
Jonathan,
of you.
Being the baby brother. Yeah. Are you kidding
Jonathan
me?
Jonathan is the youngest of four boys.
Yeah. So,
you know,
consider the source
if you have boys.
I couldn't. I was five at the time. I couldn't consider the source. It was a very reliable source for me at the time.
At the time, yeah.
When, you know, there were four kids in our family, three girls and a boy, and my brother was the youngest, and we told him, I've told you guys this
before.
Yes,
this one's great.
So we had my brother convinced for a good couple years that there existed records for all kind of things, and they just happened to be things that we wanted him to do. And so we would go, hey, Nick, the world record for going and grabbing a glass of water and coming back down the stairs is 53 seconds. Do you think you could beat it?
That's so funny.
And he's like, I can do it, guys. So he would charge up the stairs as fast as he could, grab a glass, and you'd hear the cupboard slamming, and he'd turn on the water, and he'd fill it up, and he'd come running down the stairs. He's like, how did I do?
That's
43
awesome.
Seconds.
You
Nick,
did
you
it.
Have the record.
Woo.
Hey, Nick, the record for cleaning up.
Allie, no.
When did he figure this out?
I don't know, but we had a good 2 years of like
a good 2 years.
Full-on personal assistant on
so
demand
funny.
Because this kid would do anything to get a record.
I love that.
I mean, in his mind, he probably owned about a 1,000 records, all of things that he had done for his sister.
That's very nice of him.
You know what? I love my brother. We have an awesome relationship.
Good, good.
It was really nice to have somebody bring me a glass of water.
Yes, so in 43 seconds.
Oh, coming up. What are some ways that maybe we are missing reading the Bible wrong? We're going to talk about that coming up.
Whether it's number one or 100, take that step with Jesus today. You're listening to Carl and Crew Mornings.
Have you ever accidentally put on someone else's glasses? Maybe you have multiple glasses wearers in your house and you pick up the wrong pair, or worse, you lose yours and then you really don't see at all. You've noticed that looking when you're not looking through the right lens, it can be difficult to see things clearly. Ben Connolly, a guest with us this morning, he wrote a book, Reading the Bible, Missing the Gospel. Sometimes it's a lens issue. We're not seeing things correctly because our lens is incorrect. Go ahead and give me the premise for this book you've written.
Yeah, thanks for having me. The premise comes straight out of a conversation that Jesus had with some religious leaders. And this is in John 5. He says, you search the scriptures because you think that in them you have eternal life. Mm-hmm. But it's the scriptures that bear witness about me, yet you refuse to come to me that you may have life. And I just wonder if Jesus would say similar things to us today.
Sure.
It is a really good thing to read our Bibles, to be clear. And yet, if we read it thinking that we'll find life or we'll be able to feel better or know more or follow all the rules ourselves, then we're putting our hope in the scriptures. Mm. Whereas Jesus says, no, 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 none of those things give life. In fact, a lot of those things end up making you feel shameful or guilty or weighed down or like you can't do it all. True life's found in me.
Yeah. Ben Connolly, our guest this morning, he's a pastor, he's an author, he's an equipper, he's overseen several church planting efforts. How do you see this play out? Reading the Bible, missing the gospel. What are some common ways that we read but misunderstand?
Yeah, I think some of the ways are we just kind of read as if the Bible is about me, for me. It's to make me feel good. It's to help me know more. And I feel holier because I know more. Some people go and look for rules that then we try to obey. But we've all been in the situation where try as we might, we're left going, I can't do this. And I think it's in that moment where we realize, hey, maybe we've missed the point of the scriptures. Maybe we've missed the point of the Christian message, which is, no, you can't do this. Whatever this is, you can't bear sustained fruit. You can't save yourself. You can't live by my spirit. You can't, you know, get to heaven kind of stuff. The point of the Christian message is it's not about you, and you can't, but God can, and God did, and God does.
Mm. One example you give is a topic like confession and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, for sure. This is actually the topic that got me started thinking about the book. When I was in seminary 20 some odd years ago, I remember hearing sometimes within the same lecture or same sermon, things like, on one hand, Jesus has removed your sin as far as the east is from the west.
Right.
Which is great news, good news, because of his death and in resurrection. And yet sometimes in the same sermon or same lecture, you'd hear things like, therefore, you have to go ask God for forgiveness.
Mm, okay.
And that was always a disconnect for me of like, it can't be, it's already removed. And also you have to be for it to be removed again. And so that sent me on a little bit of a search through the scriptures. And what I found is that there's actually, for all the sacrificial system in the Old Testament, for all the coming back to God and asking for forgiveness and offerings for sin, if we really believe that Jesus is the full and final sacrifice, we're actually not commanded after his resurrection to ask God for forgiveness if we're in Christ. There's still the, you know, first coming to Jesus, accepting his forgiveness, repenting of our sin, coming to Jesus. We still, if we sin against each other, we're called to ask each other for forgiveness. But for those who are in Christ, we don't have to ask God's forgiveness anymore because it's already been forgiven.
You're blowing some circuits for people right now going, wait, what?
Right. There is a command, though, of what we do with our sin.
Okay.
And that's that we confess it. But confessing and asking for forgiveness are two different things. And they've become interwoven in our Christian minds sometimes. Asking for forgiveness, though, at least in my pastoral experience for the last 20 years, leaves people really feeling like fear and shame and, oh, God, I've done it again. Mm. Is this the one that's too much for you? Whereas if we remember, like, no, even that thousand, whatever it is today, it's already been forgiven. To confess instead lets us come to God and say, yeah, I blew it. I don't have your thoughts. I don't live your lives. I am self-reliant, this kind of stuff. Mm. But rather than ask for forgiveness, when we confess those things to God, and some Christian traditions play this out really beautifully, we receive assurance, not, oh yeah, I'll forgive it in the moment, but the assurance is even that has already been taken care of.
Wow.
And so it just makes Jesus's death and resurrection all the more beautiful and sound like even better news.
You know, the word I hear thrown around a lot, there's a lot of talk about deconstruction. Mm-hmm. People talk about deconstructing their faith. And usually it's used to describe somebody who was walking with the Lord or maybe appeared to be. And now they look back on all of it. They're pulling it apart and going, none of this was real. I don't know if I believe any of this. But is there a healthy way to do some deconstruction when it comes to our both our biblical reading and understanding?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I think that if we realize, hey, some of the ways that I've gone through the Bible are looking for my own knowledge to make myself smarter or a catharsis, I need something to make me feel good, or I just need a bunch of rules to follow and try to power through by my own strength kind of stuff. I think there are some healthy ways to deconstruct some of those things and instead rebuild, which if you're going to deconstruct, we always have to reconstruct, right?
that's the word.
Reconstruction. That's the goal. If we just leave it deconstructed, then it's other than food, other than it's a bad thing. But if we reconstruct, the better foundation is to say, okay, let me go to the Bible looking at it as if it's God's story.
Because it is.
It's who he is. It's what he's been doing, is doing, will do from creation to new creation, from Genesis to Revelation. And only if we then see, okay, primarily God is the main character, then we can look at human examples in the scriptures and see some of them are good. Even the good ones are still going to die one day. They're still broken. They're still sinful. A lot of the human examples in the scriptures are not that good by comparison to God. And what's beautiful in that is we get to go like, man, they're supporting cast. We can learn from them. But even the best humans in the scriptures need God to be the main character of the Bible.
Yeah.
Just like we do. We need God to be God. And so if we can finally look to the scriptures and reconstruct by going, how do we see Jesus as the truest hero, even better than the human heroes of the Bible? How do we see Jesus as the fullest fulfillment of every verse, command, and story? then we've reconstructed to have some right lenses for reading the scriptures.
Yeah. Great little work here. This book is, again, it's called Reading the Bible, Missing the Gospel. Author Ben Connolly, our guest this morning. You can find this book at moodybooks.org, moodybooks.org. Our thanks to Ben for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Boom Crew, celebrate what God is doing in you. This is Carl and Crew Mornings.
The Gibeonite Deception. I don't know why that's so such an intriguing title to me, but it's just so clear. I mean, they deceived Joshua. They deceived the nation of Israel, the leaders of Israel, rather, and they enter into this agreement. And then when the surrounding nations want to fight them, the Gibeonites go to Joshua, hey, come to us quickly, save us, help us. And they were on the hook.
They were.
They were obligated. They had already made this agreement. And so now God meets them and he says to Joshua, the Lord said to Joshua, do not fear them, these surrounding nations, for I have given them into your hand, into your hands. And I love that picture of God's care in taking care of his people in this fight that they now have to fight.
Yeah.
Like they have to do it because these covenants were a big deal. And so he didn't get them out of it. He met them in it. And so I don't know why I think about marriage, but when I went with this, because I think a lot of times people look at their marriage situation and they say, you know what? When I got into this marriage, I didn't seek God. Maybe yeah. You weren't even following God. And so you can think that the situation is sort of hopeless or doomed because it didn't start the right way. And the reality is God can take any situation and he can redeem it. He can redeem situations that didn't start out great, that didn't start out right. I don't know what deliverance, rescue, redemption, I don't know what that looks like in your situation, but I cannot implore you more than to just seek God, seek his wisdom, seek his direction through it, whether it's a tough marriage situation or a tough job situation, or what other things could apply to this?
That's a good question. I think marriage and job are probably the biggest, but then you have, how am I going to handle even just smaller situations? Someone comes to me asking for advice. How am I going to respond? Mm-hmm. Someone comes and maybe I'm in an argument with somebody. How are we going to reconcile? Okay. Even just little one-off kind of yeah. situations, yeah. They need the counsel of God too.
Yeah. Think about like big purchases.
Yes.
Home.
A home.
Yeah.
Moving.
A move. A career decision. Mm-hmm. Something that you committed to doing and then go, oh, wait, I don't know if this was a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
These commitments, and it gets complicated. And then we start spinning.
Yeah.
What am I going to do here?
Oh, big time.
This is not off to a great start.
Mm-hmm.
Seek God. Let him tell you what deliverance looks like. Sometimes it looks like maybe him getting you out of something, not a marriage. If you made a marriage agreement, God can redeem what didn't start great.
Yeah.
And he can make it an awesome marriage now. I mean, how many stories have we heard like that?
Absolutely. Yes, there are people who have texted or called into us saying, you know, I am thankful that I didn't leave my marriage when I wanted to the most yeah. because God did something amazing from it.
Okay, let's just settle the reality that whatever situation you're in didn't start great. You didn't seek God. Let God redeem it now.
Hey, this is Carl with Carl and Crew, and I'm so grateful that you listened to this showcast. Thank you mostly for being part of the Boom Crew. As we help you take your next step with Jesus, you're a huge encouragement to us. We'll be here again live every weekday morning from 5 to 9 a.m. Godspeed.